Happy Columbus Day, Kelly here. It is 6:06. Today is the 12th of October, believe it or not. Wow, man, these days are really flying by. Hope you had a good weekend. I guess today is still the weekend, but there's a lot of people out there working still. Have some good stories for you, of course. And I think the most, kind of going through my notes here, the most remarkable thing that I ran into over the weekend was a story about the Donald and how he has broken, that he's a master wizard and that he has broken the model for public discourse. And this is the guy that by the way, who created Dilbert. Who put out a brilliant? I mean, I couldn't believe how brilliant his analysis was. And I've got the whole thing to play for you here, but let's go through a few headlines here first. Headline on Drudge: Jennifer Flowers downloading on Hillary. Hillary is getting hit from all sides. She's gone down 10 points in the polls, and they say that she is throwing childlike tantrums and cannot be appeased because she feels like the denomination that she thought was hers in a walkaway, a walk-off homer. She thought it was in her pocket so deep nobody could pull it out. Well, that's not true anymore, of course. And she's getting challenged. Now they're talking about walking away from, is it New Hampshire, where they're trying to convince her to just drop the campaign there because she's so far behind Bernie Sanders. And so we have also the debate coming up for the Dems. And you've got a few other stories here. There was a NFL football, we're down to a few undefeated teams, which I will tell you about later. The NCAAs also have some, instability in them. Witchcraft and exorcism are on the ride around the are on the rise around the world. Paul Ryan has been begged to come into the speakership race, and he cannot find 218 votes. And as you recall, it turned out that Paul Ryan, who came in as a strong fiscal conservative into the presidential race as a vice president, turned out to be not the most conservative member of the House, of course. All right, so I got to play this thing on Trump for you. I just thought it was absolutely amazing. And you are going to absolutely love, you're going to love this. Whether you love Trump or not is really not the issue. You are going to love what this guy, this creator of Dilbert has to say, because he's calling, it makes sense of a lot of the stuff that's going on out there. He's calling Donald Trump a master wizard who's probably going to win the election with his linguistic kill shots, which, and this is coming out of Reason TV, by the way, and Reason is a magazine and a website for libertarians, but check this out.
Skills that are so deep and so exquisite, it would be hard for me to imagine anybody beating him. And so I've predicted he'll go all the way and win the presidency.
Donald Trump has a way with words and people.
I will be phenomenal to the women. I have many Hispanics working for me, many, many Hispanics. We're rounding them up in a very humane way, in a very nice way. And they're going to be happy to vote for me because we're going to make America great again.
But the media don't get it. He doesn't appreciate it.
You know, some of the media is among the worst people I've ever met. And I mean, a pretty good percentage is really a terrible group of people.
Scott Adams, prolific author, blogger, and creator of Dilbert, thinks they're all getting trolled.
I'm saying, I see a flamethrower. I think the flamethrower guy wins in the stick fight.
Though he doesn't support Trump or any other candidate, he believes that Trump is, in fact, a master wizard.
The idea of the master wizard hypothesis says that there are some people in the world, living people, who are masters of persuasion. They've got a linguistic gift for influencing people, and they're using actual technique. What I saw in Trump was someone who was highly trained, and that a lot of the things that the media were reporting as sort of random insults and bluster and just Trump being Trump looked to me like a lot of deep technique that I recognized from the fields of hypnosis and persuasion. So let me give you a few examples of the technique that Trump uses. There's something that I call the linguistic kill shot. And what that is a engineered set of words that essentially changes an argument or ends it so decisively. I call it a kill shot. So one of the ones that Donald Trump used was when he referred to Jeb Bush being a low energy guy.
Very, very low energy. So low energy that every time you watch him, you fall asleep.
You cannot take more energy tonight.
Or when he referred to Carly Fiorina as a robot.
Like a robot. Ba, ba, ba. Like a robot.
Or Carson as nice.
Ben is a nice man.
He's actually a really nice guy.
All of these have the same quality. They're words you haven't heard in the political realm before. So they're sort of virginal words that he can use the way he wants. They don't have a lot of baggage with them. But they also perfectly fit what you are already thinking about these people. They weren't random insults. And once you hear it, you can never get it out of your mind. That's how powerful it is. You notice that he insults people that come at him.
I'm telling you, anybody that would view it that way has to be a little bit of a deviant.
And he also compliments people quite effusively when they're nice, or at least they're not bothering him.
I think they like me in a certain way, which is nice. It's always nice to be liked.
So what he's done is he's created a fairly large gap between insulting Trump, where he'll take you down, or being nice to him, where he'll take you up.
It sounds like you're saying I have leverage over the Republican Party, so they better be nice to me.
Well, essentially, I want to be treated fairly. That's true. I do want to be not nice.
You go against him, you know there's a little bit more to lose. An anchor is something big and visual and emotional that takes you off of whatever you were thinking before just because it's a bigger thought. So, for example, when Trump was in his first debate.
You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals.
That was a terrible thing for him to answer with a direct answer, but he didn't do that.
Your Twitter account?
Only Rosie O'Donnell.
Immediately, you go to this big visual, everybody knows her. His base probably has a negative feeling about her.
Not to cut that off there, we're about halfway through this clip, but I wanted to mention to you that I found some articles on Rosie O'Donnell that were very interesting to me. I'll tell you more about those in a minute. Let's take a break here, only to stay on our schedule for these the lovely ads that support the show. But I found some, and I might have to do a little bit digging to find these to get back to them. I'll tell you about them later. But as I had them saved for last week, and I never got to them. But it was stuff that I couldn't believe about. Rosie, I'll tell you one thing. It had to do with her daughter leaving and what kind of a mother she is. So anyway, it's 6:15, Kelly O'Connell Show. We'll come back and play a little bit more. The idea from the creator of Dilbert that Donald Trump is a wizard. He's a master wizard. And there's got to be something behind his ability to manipulate the media and not get taken down after so many conservative commentators and many other people. Conservative commentators who find their words to be decisive, you know, deeply meaningful, and to end arguments, not start arguments, but to end arguments. And they just bounce off Donald Trump like bullets off of Superman. It is 6:16. You're listening to the Kelly O'Connell Show on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450 to call in, and we're going to come back and listen to some more of the master wizard analogy of Donald Trump. All right, I got a little bit more of your linguistic kill shot from the creator of the Dilbert cartoon, which seems like it was the foundation for the TV show The Office. But anyway, Dilbert is, pardon me, set in an office. But here is a little bit more on Donald Trump's amazing ability to control the dialogue, the topic, and to make bad questions and issues go away. A little bit more from Scott Adams.
And all the headlines became about Rosie O'Donnell instead of, is Trump a sexist?
I blurted out the name Rosie O'Donnell and the place went crazy. And it really had a big impact on her questioning.
Kind of brilliant. He does the same thing with his idea for immigration and for the wall. The wall is this big, visual, magnificent thing in your head.
It will be a real wall. It will be a wall that works. It'll actually be a wall that will look good. A big, beautiful, powerful wall. It can have a gate. It can have a door. Have a tremendous, beautiful, wide-open door. Nice, big door.
Even if you hate it, it's still big and visual, and it takes all the attention in that direction, and that's what he wants. One of the things that Trump does really well is he uses a type of linguistic judo. For example, there was one interviewer who said, you're kind of a whiner.
Rich Lowry says that you are the most fabulous whiner in the world. And
instead of saying, no, I'm not a whiner, Trump embraced it like judo. He took the force of the label and said,
I am a whiner, and I'm a whiner, and I keep whining and whining until I win. And I'm going to win for the country, and I'm going to make our country great again.
So he changed whiner into the biggest voice for change. And he did it with just a few words. It's amazing. Likewise, if Trump says anything about capitalism in the context of the Pope, it's just not going to come out right. So instead, Trump doesn't take the bait.
What do you say in response to the Pope?
I'd say ISIS wants to get you.
It's such a big, bold thought.
It's all you do about capitalism. You scare the Pope?
No, I'm going to have to scare the Pope.
All your attention just goes to that. He uses vagueness as a tool. This is a trick I learned in hypnosis class. Sometimes you want to tell a story in a way that lets people fill in the blanks with whatever would make them the happiest. So if Trump has a vague idea about foreign policy,
just like I have the Chinese banks in my buildings, they listen to me, they respect me.
Your vague idea about the economy.
My economy will expand so rapidly. We're going to take jobs back from other countries.
Your vague idea about how to handle ISIS.
I would end ISIS forcefully.
People fill in the blanks with brilliant plans that are their own plans. It's more of a strategy than you imagine it is. But he has another thing going for him. He's developed the Trump persona over many years. He can do what nobody can do as a politician. He can change his mind.
Raising the Social Security retirement age to 70. Is that still your plan?
Yeah, not anymore.
He can say, I'm not going to tell you what I'll do. I'll just hire good people to do it.
I have the smartest people on Wall Street lined up already.
And he also can tell a joke. He can be outrageous.
I'm worried if you're president, I'll get deported. All right? That's what I'm worried
about.
Never
be. We're going to try like hell to keep you here, Bill.
You see apple pie and flags and eagles coming out of his ass when he talks. A lot of people ask me what could bring down Donald Trump. Probably there's no defense, and that's why I predicted he probably will win the presidency based just on skill. I've said that if Trump wins, it might change how we see the world, not just how we see politics, but how we see humans and how humans are influenced and how little reason has anything to do with what we do. In my book, How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big, I write about the moist robot idea. It's the idea that humans are essentially robots that are made of meat. In that world, emotion and influence and all the techniques that Trump uses are really the only things that explain what's happening in the world. Reason will never be a satisfying explanation of what you see.
We're going to build a wall. And we're going to create.
I find it terribly interesting that you can defend an entirely different view of the world with the same data that's used to defend the standard model. So whenever I can do that, I'm so there. Because as soon as you realize that the model you've been looking at maybe isn't so firm as you thought, then you're free.
Interesting, huh? Now, he says he's not supporting Donald Trump, but I think that one of the things, whether Donald Trump makes it or not, is not as interesting as the issue of how he's changing how we view politics. But the current model that we have, this kind of neo-Puritanism, this PC, politically correct view of the society where certain things become off limits to talk about, to criticize or talk about, and these could change overnight. You know, an issue comes up, it is deemed by the powers that be to be too important to allow to be criticized, and then all of a sudden you can't talk about it anymore. While public policy is going along that supports, defends, whatever these issues, so it's effectively it's put into a bubble. And so what Trump is showing is approach that way. You can stand up and talk about issues as long as you do it artfully and people are interested in it. And I think that America is going, I suspect anyway, owing Donald Trump a thank you for going after political correctness. I mean, I can't imagine that we'll ever talk about some of these things the same way again. All right, let's come back and talk about the NCAA scores. Kelly O'Connell, 627, AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. And hope you're having a good Columbus Day weekend on the 12th of October. All right, so we've got here scores for you. Number 13, Ole Miss, 52, NMST, not the finest day for us. Army, number 25, Duke, 40, number 2, Baylor, 66, Kansas, 7, number 19, Oklahoma, 17, Texas, 24, number 18, Iowa, 29, Illinois, 20, number 1, Ohio State, 49, Maryland, 28, number 22, Toledo, 38, Kansas, 7, LSU 45, South Carolina 24. LSU has an incredible run back. I think his name's Ford or something like that. Number 5, Clemson 43, Georgia Tech 24, number 12, Michigan 38, number 20, Northwestern, zilch. Number 15, Notre Dame 41, Navy 24, number 10, Alabama 27, South 14, number 16, Oklahoma 33, West Virginia 26, number 21, Boise State 41, Colorado State 10, number 8, Florida 21, Missouri 3, number 3, TU 52, State 45. TU almost lost that game, by the way. Number 11, Florida State 29, Miami of Florida 24, number 7, Michigan State 21, Rutgers, 31, Rutgers 24, and number 4, Utah 30, number 23, California 24. Utah is on an incredible year this year. Okay, so that's your NCAA football, and Oregon has just fallen out of the sky like a duck that has been blasted on hunting day. I can put it that way. It's a little bit painful, but it's good to have everybody in these conferences and stuff. All right, so a little more cozy. Let me just give you a little bit of a hand on this, a few nibbles. Rosie, according to the girl named Chelsea, raised by her, number one, Chelsea's mother claims that Rosie O'Donnell stole her when she was in a situation where she was using heroin or whatever, that Rosie snuck in and grabbed her. Chelsea saying she never ran away, and that Rosie O'Donnell had gotten up and said she ran away because she has mental health concerns. And this girl says, "It's painful to hear your mom talk about that in such a manner," and that she actually just suffers from depression. I'll give you a few more little nibbles on this in a minute. Come back and talk about the NFL. Kelly O'Connor, 634, 523, 1450 on AM Las Cruces, 450 KOBE. And got some scores for NFL. But I got to get back into this Master Wizard thing is interesting, and tell you also about what's going on in speakership.
Drift by the window, the autumn leaves.
Well, they did a big story about how Aaron Rodgers had not had an interception at home. Aaron Rodgers had not had an interception at home in Green Bay for 3 years. And then he threw two interceptions. So then he got up in the game afterwards, or the press conference, and said, basically, I threw too many interceptions, which, you know, I'm sure the guy is a brilliant quarterback, is he not? And there was a great game, a great late game. San Francisco is probably, it's too early to pull Colin Kaepernick from this team, but he played pretty well. All right, so tonight you've got Pittsburgh versus San Diego. 2-2 team versus 2-2. And think of which games you'd find the most interesting. Obviously, Buffalo, Tennessee, 14-13. New England played Dallas. Cleveland, believe it or not, beat Baltimore, 33-30. Philadelphia spanked the daylights out of New Orleans, 39-17. The Eagles are finally starting to look like the team that they were supposed to be. Cincinnati and Seattle had a slugfest. Kansas City, 17. Chicago Bears, 18. Jake Cutler didn't give up. Atlanta, 25. Washington, 19. Washington was on the verge of a huge upset, or at least a big upset, and to beat the undefeated Falcons. Falcons are weird. One year they're great. The next year they stink. The next year after that they're great again. It's very strange. Tampa Bay, 38. Jacksonville, 31. And let me get you, see if I can get you a little bit of audio on these, some of these, couple of these here. But I know that we've got that the Cowboys are struggling. But I mean, how could they possibly not struggle? You've got the loss of the quarterback, the number one receiver, and the number one running back. So the running back just found out that he has a blown out ACL. So we'll get you a little bit of info on that game. But it's just, I don't know, man. It's a little bit sad to see some of these great teams struggling like that. You've got on the sidelines looking at Tom Brady. And I've got, here we go. Here's a little bit on this game, the Indianapolis Colts and the Texans.
All right, the Texans lose again. He hinted in the beginning what they have to do to get over the hump to win a game. What do you think the Texans have to do to get over the hump to win a game?
How about quitting stupid? Penalizing yourself, shooting yourself in the foot. You saw constant penalties. At one point, they had 14 going into the fourth quarter or into the fourth quarter, the 14 different penalties. You saw DeAndre Hopkins throw the ball on the sideline. That's one of those things that gets a huge gain and then gets a big chunk of that 15 yards called back for taunting. And then Brian Hoyer, third down and two, all kinds of time. Dump it, play on fourth down instead, throws it up in the middle of the football field for an interception at the end of the game while you're going down for a game-winning drive. You guys hurt yourself. That's the bottom line with this Houston Texans team, and that has been a consistent theme throughout this season.
All right, and Matt Hasselbeck, by the way, had been in the hospital getting intravenous fluids to get ready for this game, and he came out, and I'm not saying he played the game of his life, but he did play a pretty good game, and he was there to kind of man the offense, obviously, and did a lot more than that. You got to take your hat off to him. Packers over the Rams, and I've got a little bit of clip for you on that game. But Aaron Rodgers, if you compare him to Tom Brady, who's the better quarterback? I mean, it would be hard to say, really, only because, you know, Aaron Rodgers seems to play at the very highest level at all times. And he's lost two of his best receivers, and he's just picking up as if nothing has changed.
Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. You know when the bottom of your screen says zero interceptions at home since December 2012?
That's about to happen.
that is going to happen. James Laurinaitis, he will be the one remembered for breaking up the screen.
But you know what? It does it really count because it's not a clean interception. It's a tip ball. Yes, they all count.
And there was another one as
yes,
well.
Yes, there was. Yeah.
All right, third quarter, pack up 14-10, second and three, Rodgers back. That's what we usually see from him. James Jones managed to hang on to that one. It would be reviewed, but after the review, it is ruled a touchdown, so it goes up 21-10 there.
Do you think Aaron Rodgers is happy to have James Jones back? Couldn't fit with the Raiders, couldn't fit with the Giants, fits quite well. In Green Bay right now. This wasn't a pretty contest, but there are no pictures on the scorecards, and Packers advance.
24-10. Now you've got also, I mean, it's just, this, not to rub it in, Nick Foles was on the Eagles and he played pretty good for a couple of years, but he had four interceptions in the game. I mean, four interceptions, you know. Now here is from your Cardinals and Lions game, and Matt Stafford looks like he's ready for the hook. They say he does not, he's not a hard worker on his game. He came in as the number one high school quarterback and then the number one college quarterback, but, and he's had some great years, but he's really struggling.
Lions hosting the Cardinals. Detroit actually led 7-0 in the first quarter. Then it got ugly. Matt Stafford picked off by Corey Redding. Check this out. The big man tried to leap over Stafford, almost made it down to the 2-yard line. Stafford eventually benched because he threw three interceptions and one touchdown. The Cardinals just piled it on. That's John Brown with an 18-yard score. Cards up 28-7 in the third quarter. Carson Palmer to Larry Fitzgerald. Fitz with 58 yards, one touch. Palmer, 11 of 14, 161 yards, three touchdowns. That's another look at Fitzgerald's catch. Fourth quarter now. Cardinals up. They're just trying to run out some clock, but Andre Ellington's like, you know what? I feel like scoring a touchdown. He breaks through for 63 yards. Ellington, one touchdown on the day. Cardinals go on to win this one 42-17. Detroit had six turnovers, and they dropped to 0-5.
Well, the way that Carson Palmer is playing, he could get a MVP if he keeps it up. I've just, you know, he played. He got, tore up his ACL. He took a year off and came back, and right where he was at. We'll take a break and come back and get your little story on your Cowboys and on your Broncos.
Red and gold.
AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450.
I see your lips. The summer kisses.
All right, so I've got your concluding games here, and let's go to the Seahawks versus the Broncos or the Bengals.
The Seahawks visiting the Bengals, Cincy looking to stay unbeaten, picking it up in the third quarter. Seahawks up by three. Thomas Rawls, starting in place of the injured Marshawn Lynch, goes 69 yards for the score. Seattle's up by 10. Rawls finished with 169 yards on 23 carries. A little later, Rex Burkhead coughs it up. Bobby Wagner's like, I'll take that. He goes 23 yards the other way. Seahawks up 24-7. But here comes Houdet. Andy Dalton up the middle from 5 yards out. Bengals down 24-21. End of regulation. Mike Nugent nails the 31-yard field goal. We're tied at 24, going to overtime. So Wilson back to pass, and he's looking to create, but he goes down. Carlos Dunlap on there. Bengals had 4 sacks on the day. Bengals get the ball back, and Mike Nugent off the left upright and in. Bengals go on to win 27-24.
A little bit of a surprise ending, I guess, from how it started. All right, here is your, and this was an amazing game, but believe it or not, 49ers versus the Giants in New York, I believe, in East Rutherford, New Jersey, technically.
Manning under pressure, gets it out. There's Beckham. Little zig, little zag. We got a hamstring injury?
We got a little hamstring. Type yourself a hamstring. Going to the sideline. That's not a good
sign.
The
whole, act like you've done it before.
Well, we've done it before. Here we go.
Here come the 49ers back.
Nice year. Gets to Garrett Selleck.
He ran the little knock.
Right on the linebacker. Colin, who moved right?
Less than 3 minutes in this one. Carlos Hyde again.
So patient.
Touchdown 49ers.
Nice
increase. 27-23. But look at that. So we got a buck 45 left on the clock. 30 seconds left. Okay. Odell Beckham's in for this one. He's showing up.
Bad hammy at all. He broke the PI.
Good play there. Who comes off the bench? T.I. and now Eli about to do this thing again. Eli, look at that throw and catch.
First down at the 12, touchdown.
And the Giants come back and win this by a count of 30-27.
Good game and a good game to have on TV. All right, here is your, I'm saving the best for last, of course, Cowboys next, but here is Denver versus the Raiders, a surprisingly competitive game.
Undefeated Broncos visiting the Raiders. Second.
And here we have that clip.
Undefeated Broncos visiting the Raiders. Second quarter, Derek Carr with the bootleg. Wide open, Marcel Lynch for the easy score. Raiders up 7-3. Carr with 249 passing yards. In the second quarter, this is not good for Broncos fans. DeMarcus Ware hobbling. He'd get carted off the field with an apparent back injury. 25 seconds left in the first half. Peyton Manning picked off by Charles Woodson. Draft class of 1998. Say what? Woodson's first career pick of Manning, and he wasn't done. Manning looking for Demaryius Thomas. Woodson! Acrobatic move to steal this. Prior to Sunday, no player 39 years or older had ever intercepted a quarterback 39 years or older. And the picks would keep coming. Chris Harris swipes Derek Carr 74 yards the other way. Manning, 266 yards, 2 picks. Broncos win.
All right, so is the age starting to show on Peyton? Who knows? Nothing lasts forever. Here we go. Here's your Patriots versus your Cowboys.
Tom Brady and the Patriots taking their undefeated record on the road against the Cowboys. Second quarter, tied at 3. Deion Lewis with some moves. Can't quite get in the end zone, but he takes it to the 1. Lewis had 93 total yards. Next play, Tom Brady with the sneak. His first rushing touchdown since 2012. Patriots up 10-3. Third quarter action. Brady finds Gronk, Rob Gronkowski. And he stiff arms. He's just throwing everyone all over the place. Byron Jones later. J.J. Wilcox, see ya, buddy. Patriots first down. Gronk with 67 yards on the day. Brady, 275 yards. Here he hooks up with Deion Lewis. And Lewis, with the moves, breaks 3 tackles. He finds the end zone. New England's up 20-3. Then later, Brady to Julian Edelman. Quick cut. And it's home free. 59-yard score. Patriots going to win 30-6. Tom Brady, very happy with the win.
The Julian Edelman score was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. He juked the guy at the line out of his jock strap. The defensive back, the corner, just falls down. And then he goes and gets a pass that's kind of dropped over on the left side. And then he beats 4 or 5 different Cowboys that all looked like they had a shot at him. Julian Edelman is an amazing player and has made the most out of his talent, certainly. All right, so here's your sports, weekend sports, and I think that the big deal that's going on right now is the fight over the speakership. And some people are saying that the Republican Party is absolutely falling apart. Other people are, I think, more fairly saying that democracy and republicanism. People don't talk about the Republican form of government that we have enough. Democracy is just one person, one vote, which quickly degenerates into mob rule. What America has is a large number of different institutions that are meant to diffuse and to keep us from turning into a tyranny. And so, you know, you've got this fight over who's going to lead the people on the in the Republican Party, and people on the left, obviously, very concerned about what's going on. And are warning that the party's falling apart. And I think that the left is obviously concerned that the right does not get a strong leader who's conservative. I mean, John Boehner wasn't conservative. Paul Ryan, unfortunately, not a conservative either. So you're going to have a fight over someone who's conservative enough to lead the group. Now, a lot of people will say, well, it's a small number of persons in the GOP that are Tea Party, that are truly conservative, and therefore they shouldn't get the choice of the speaker. But in politics, as in all other things, the energy and momentum and desire of individual people matter very much. And if the Tea Party is more motivated than any other group, and is more concerned and willing to fight harder, why shouldn't they get the speakership? You know, it's not just the group that has the largest number of representatives there, because, you know, the Tea Party is what has helped propel the GOP to victories in terms of numbers in the Senate and the House. They should be rewarded, in my opinion, just my theory. But you've got the party on the left, the Democrats, and I don't know. It seems to me like the Democratic, they're saying the GOP is going to end. It's not going to end. It's going to get stronger. There might be fights. There might be people that walk out of or are thrown out of leadership, but that party is not going to end right now. But what you could see happening is that the Democrats could go into a very long and possibly, you know, possibly very, you know, I very destructive decline in the party. I'm looking at this situation. I think the Obama leadership, whether you agree with him or not, has been a total disaster. Because simply he's not a leader. He's a person who had certain goals when he came into office. He's undoubtedly reached some of those. But in terms of building a party, I don't think he really cares, you know? 6:59, you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Was reading last night Burke talking about ideology. I'll come back and mention something about that. But I got to dig into more Rosie O'Donnell, too. She's so disgusting. We'll be back after a break on the hour.
The sunburned hand I used to hold. Since you went away, the days grow long, and soon I'll hear old winter song.
A you heard the NFL storyline, and then we've got I've got Richard Hall here, and he texted me the other day, and so he asked if he could come on the show. So I guess that's what you call telegraphing. But anyway, so Rosie O'Donnell, I just want to tell you this, you know, and it's caught up in the whole controversy of gay marriage and gay adoption and everything, which are, in my opinion, slightly different topics with whether, you know, gay people can live in the society and not be harassed or whatever, which we live in a pluralistic society, whether that's convenient or not. And, you know, in some ways, I think it's more inconvenient for the people on the left, because the people on the left, far left, I'm talking about, are really bothered by individuals who don't agree with them, which is where we get political correctness. Political correctness is not just a doctrine to be polite, although some of my friends claim that. It is a way of not just shutting people's mouths on topics. It is a way to wash their minds. It's like a mini, you know, re-education camp. And that's what makes it so dangerous. And I was mentioning to you, I was reading Burke, and Burke is considered to be the father of the modern conservative movement, and an extremely important thinker. He was a member of parliament, and was in office, then out of office, but he was a very smart guy. And one of the things that he was writing about is that he didn't trust ideology. He didn't trust ideology because ideology was the thing that took people away from being in touch with the world around them. And if you think about that, I think it's true in a lot of ways. Who in the Soviet Union, after Lenin took power, who would have foreseen the massive number of murders between Lenin and Stalin, and then Chairman Mao in Russia, in China? What explains that number, that incredible number of murders? And the only thing that can explain it, the one constant in all of these murderous regimes, and there were more murders last century done by the left than in recorded human history. From what I understand, 200 million people were executed by the government for no other reason than they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. So, you know, we've got this movement in the right. I was also getting into the history of the conservative movement, but liberalism. And we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. I'll tell you about the history of liberalism, the word, in just a second. Thanks for calling in. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly.
Takashi, how you doing?
How are you this morning, sir?
Good. How about yourself?
Another beautiful day in the line of the three crosses, man.
Yeah, it's a wonderful weather. It's the change of weather. I've been trying to play a little Sinatra to salute that. So what's...
I would like to...
Go ahead.
I would like to mention the hospital bombing, the accidental bombing of a hospital that the Doctors Without Borders that killed a couple of Americans and some people over there.
Yeah, well, what do you want to mention?
It was funny how you brought up this whole narcissistic movement with Stalin and all these kind of guys. And,
yep.
I just wanted you to kind of expound on that issue this morning, Kelly.
It's connect the dots for us so I can know exactly what you're thinking.
Well, you know, it's just funny that when these people, the building blew up, instantly the Pentagon said they were ready to pay these people out. But it's just sad that there's a monetary value on life to where, you know, no due process or nothing. Nobody gets to take responsibility for all these lives. You know, it's just simply called an accident and then the checks get cut, you know.
And we should have a war tribunal or what?
I mean, I guess my point would be this wouldn't be the first incident for a situation such as this one. So I'm saying, at what point is there going to be some kind of, what's that word I'm looking for?
Justice.
There we go. At what point somebody is held accountable for this?
I mean, is this going to be the first time in history somebody's held accountable? I don't really know where you're going with this. Are you trying to?
Hold on.
I know you're asking,
right now,
but in
like,
asking,
you
it's
know,
a little bit vague.
It's not necessary.
Takashi, I'm trying to talk. Hold on a second. Here's the question. Are you saying that the United States government is as bad as the Russian, the communist government?
No, not exactly. What I'm saying is when these mistakes are made historically, someone should be held accountable. It seems like when you're on the governmental side of things, you kind of have this immunity.
That is that's the official policy in a lot of these places. But I mean, you know, it seems like to me in other countries, nobody even tries to find out who's responsible. Sometimes there's obviously a mistake that was made. It was either I cannot imagine that they did it on purpose. So we have to assume that it's on accident. Who made the mistake? We can track that person down, prosecute him, stick him in prison. But we're still stuck in this stupid conflict in Syria that some people say was avoidable. Why don't you say something about that?
Well, I don't see how it would be avoidable.
Well,
when
if the president stuck to his guns, literally, pardon the pun, when he drew his line in the sand, and then he went in and did whatever he was originally planning on doing, this situation could have been avoided. But my main concern is that the fallout dithering in the Middle East is allowed a group like ISIS to arise and dominate in certain areas over there and kill many Christians.
This is what I think happened, Kelly. I think ISIS itself posed as the Muslim Brotherhood or some, either it kind of dissolved into ISIS after a while, but I think initially they were quote-unquote trying to prop up the rebels to go against this guy Assad. But in saying that, if he had stuck to his guns with that red line in the sand, I literally think we would have had another Afghanistan slash Iraq on our hands.
We might
have been sending them boys off the war right now, Kelly.
Takashi, that may be true, but then why say that there's a line in the sand? This president, I don't know why this president decided to run for office. I don't know what his goals were. We're struggling through another year of recession locally and nationally, but he seems to make bad decisions, at least in international situations.
You know what, Kelly? I'm just going to say it plain and simple as this. It's a tough job, man. You know?
Yeah, but is he making the most of the opportunities? What does he believe in? It's all right, so let me connect the dots for you on what I was saying earlier. Edmund Burke, this great genius who kind of blazed a trail for the conservatives, he did not really believe in getting involved in foreign. I don't think any of these original conservatives believed in getting involved in foreign wars. But, you know, there's an ideology that's connected with the far left that I think causes people to make bad decisions because they're not in contact with facts on the ground.
Well, that seems like a lot of those people in Congress, the Senate, I mean, all those decision makers seems like they don't have a clue as to what real world situations are like.
I agree. But I mean, you know, you've got to admit, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, if you run for Congress and you promise to do something when you get there, you're running on a platform and you get there and you don't even try. That's totally unacceptable. I mean, I'm talking specifically about these so-called conservatives.
But I guess we are to blame, Kelly, because we keep putting them back into power. We keep putting these people back into office. We keep working with the same scenario. You know, they say repeating the same thing over and over without new results is the definition of insanity. And I mean, democracy, this whole democratic system, this two-party system we've been, you know, participating in.
Well, if you heard the earlier part of the show, I played a clip from Scott Adams, who the writer of Dilbert, and he said that this Trump could be a game changer because he comes in and he speaks on topics and gives a new slant, and he's still leading. You know, he's still up there. I think people are very, very afraid of the political correctness movement, and they look at government and think that it's totally out of control. Thanks for the call, Takashi. Got a got to take a break here. But as I was saying, all right, so there's this ideology. People buy into it. My problem with ideology as opposed to some sort of a religious view of life is ideology is the philosophy of human beings, and it is historically, we see that it is the most destructive thing in history. The most destructive force in history is ideology, and we're right in the middle of it. Our bad decision making in the Middle East is because of somebody's ideology that is not accurate. We know it's not accurate because it constantly is being employed to make bad decisions that harm American interests, put America in harm's way. 717 Kelly O'Connell, got Richard Hall here, and we'll come back and talk to him in a minute. But I got to tell you some rosy stories before we get to him. 1450 KOBE, 523-1450.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune.
All right, just a little bit here, 721 on wrote this story about Rosie O'Donnell is just kind of fascinating to me. This 18-year-old girl that she raised from an infancy had said that her mom's a complete phony, that she's totally different in private than she is in public, that she puts on a big smile on her face when she goes out. But she Rosie O'Donnell sounds like she's a depressed person. Her daughter says that she has a house that she bought next door to her own. I mean, Rosie O'Donnell's worth about $100 million. And so she goes over there and does arts and crafts that she sells on eBay. And she blasts Madonna and smokes weed. And that she said that she doesn't smoke weed in the house, but there's just the stench from the house next door is just overwhelming. And that she left the View because she thought she was going to get a heart attack from Whoopi Goldberg arguing with her. And so that she kicked her daughter out when she was 18 years old, but right before her 18th birthday to go live with her boyfriend. All right. So this girl says that Rosie told her that she adopted her, that she was born addicted to heroin, but that the girl went and got her hospital records and found out that when she was born, she didn't have any heroin in her system. Now the girl had formed a relationship or a bond with Kelly Carpenter, who was the former spouse of Rosie O'Donnell, and that when they got divorced, that she went into basically depression, and that she still suffers from depression, and that she's getting to know her birth mother. Anyway, Rosie O'Donnell hangs around the house in spandex pants and t-shirts and never wears any makeup unless somebody else does it for her, unless she has to, and that she used to drink beer all the time, but since her heart attack now she drinks wine. So anyway, this is a very long article. It's in the Daily Mail. I won't bore you with all the details, but the girl seems like a nice girl. It's called Exclusive, Rosie O'Donnell's Daughter, Chelsea 18 Break Silence, so you can look it up. But it just kind of made it sound like Rosie O'Donnell was a deeply unhappy person who had tried to assemble a family to make herself happier. But this girl is saying that she doesn't really seem to enjoy being a mother per se, that she spends most of her time doing arts and crafts in the house next door and smoking weed, listening to Madonna, and that she is, I don't know, a totally dysfunctional and an unhappy person. And that, I don't know, I don't even know why I'm talking about this. I find that Rosie O'Donnell, her persona is very disturbing to me because she's not, I feel like she's taking on the history, you know, the history of the human race. She goes and attacks Tom, what's his face, Selleck, on the you know, attacks him. She used to be the queen of nice, and now she just sounds like the kind of person who'd walk around. She sleeps late. She seems like the kind of person who'd walk around eating straight out of a jar of mayonnaise. But anyway, I've got a guest here, Richard Hall. I didn't mean to bring that imagery into your mind there, Richard. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for having me today.
No problem. Okay, so running for District 4 City Council, I want to say this again because I'm so stunned by it. People have said to me, and I've heard people say about me, I'm sort of some sort of a GOP hack. I've never been contacted. I've had much more interaction with the Democratic Party in this town, and the GOP has never bothered to contact me, and it's never been on in 4 years. I just find that so stunning. And I'm talking about the issues on a fairly regular basis that they're supposed to care about. They're either too lazy or too disorganized to contact me. But you don't have any GOP candidates running in the city election. I just find that so bizarre. You know,
well,
but anyway,
I'm the only one.
Yeah, Richard, you're the only one. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, you're a lightning rod. I think that you attract the attention of the liberals and the Democrats because you make common sense comments. I've listened to you for years, and when you speak, I think, man, that's exactly what I was thinking about the same subject. So I really agree with you on a huge amount of issues, probably all of them. And when you talk, it irritates people on the left, and they say, gosh, he must be a GOP hack because of your common sense and you make sense and you get the issues straight and you get the facts straight.
Well, I mean, I'm very disillusioned by the GOP, and I think most people who are members of the party are now. They really don't understand what's going on, that they don't understand why their leaders don't stand up for them. And then when somebody stands up and really starts attacking the issues like Trump, people go haywire. He's too rude. He's sexist. He's racist. In the meantime, you know, the GOP candidates look like puppies that just got spanked for, you know, peeing or something.
Well, I think it's almost a politeness issue when GOP candidates try to be polite, try to be kind, or not name call the way the other side might do. We like to stick with the facts. I mean, it's a fact that when you tax something, that item or whatever it is goes down. And when you subsidize something, it goes up.
The price.
Yeah. Well, and when any action, if you tax an action, that action decreases.
Well, why don't we, before we get into talking about taxing actions, let's why don't we give people a little background on yourself?
All right. I've been a gymnastics coach for 41 years. I coached in Arizona at Arizona State University as an assistant coach, training with Kurt Thomas for a year. It was a great year, 1979. He went on to win the world championships in Fort Worth on two events and second in the all-around. I've done construction the last 12 years in Las Cruces. I have a small construction company. And I also own a cinnamon roasted nut business in the mall. It's a seasonal business. We've been with that for 14 years. So being a gymnastics coach the last 16 years in Las Cruces with a nonprofit gym, Cruces Gymnastics Academy, I've seen quite a bit of changes in the business climate in Las Cruces. And I'm real disappointed in seeing so many empty buildings everywhere I drive. It just seems like the city of Las Cruces has put up a sign that says, if you want to start a business here, you're going to have to jump through a lot of hoops, pay a lot of fees, and pay high taxes.
The city doesn't care, and it seems like the mayor is so proud of himself. And I look around the city like you, and I see all these empty buildings, and I think of the potential, just this wasted potential, all the families that could be self-sustaining and not need any help from the government and be putting a nice future together for their families.
Yeah, I believe a lot of Las Cruces would love to open their own business. A lot of mom and pop shops. We have many, many restaurants that are run by families that have been here since the 60s. One of my favorites is Nelly's Cafe on Hadley. I love the food. The ownership is so kind and generous. And you'll find throughout our interview today, I'm probably going to mention many, many businesses, not just in my district, but others, because I'm a pro-business person. I own a business. I want to see all the businesses that are in Las Cruces succeed. And competition is not a bad thing. It's a good thing.
All right. And so what caused you to want to run for office?
Well, a friend of mine, Eli Guzman, had a kickoff party at Roberto's about 5 weeks ago.
Eli stood me up on Friday. No call, no show. Shame on you, Eli.
Yes, Eli, get on the radio. Anyway, he had friends of mine as well as friends of his at the kickoff. And I heard all the comments about we need more people that, you know, make a difference, stand up, have a backbone, and do what needs to be done to make the city more business friendly. And after I heard the whole thing, I thought, well, I'm going to look into who's running in my district so I can support them if they have that pro-business stance and jobs. And so I didn't find anyone. And that's when I mentioned to other friends, I'm thinking about running. And they said, we got the right people for you to talk to. And the ball started rolling from there.
Well, what does the GOP need to do to get its act together in this town? I mean, it's 35-65 from what I understand, the party affiliation in the town. So they're down 2-1. But, I mean, it seems like they've just given up. They're not even running candidates.
Well, in some ways, the average business owner, like myself, looks at the situation and says, I'm really too busy to commit to running. I have, you know, people to keep busy in my work, in my job.
But isn't that true for both sides?
I think there's less people in the other side that own businesses. I think they have jobs where they work for the state or work for the city or work for, or they might have a degree in something. But for the most part, I've met quite a few people on the left that have never done a payroll, paid the workman's comp fee every month. They've never done what a lot of business owners do, and that is kind of lose sleep at night worrying how you're going to make the end of the month bills and keep your business open so the 5, 10, or 20 employees will have a job.
Yeah, okay. So what are some of the issues that let's take a little not a non-break here, but we'll be back in just a second. We're going to talk to Richard Hall about his campaign, what he's fighting for. 731 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450 KOBE, and 523 1450 to call in. And we're going to come back and find out what Richard Hall's campaign is all about.
And I'm back on top in June. I said that's life. And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream.
Hey, it's Kelly, 735. And yeah, the weather's changing a little bit. And so there have been some stories out there. The monster El Nino is here to stay. And we're going to have a wet winter. Another story, exorcism cases on the rise, according to UK police, witchcraft, exorcism, kids getting kicked out of their houses or getting the stuffing knocked out of them because they're said to be possessed. But anyway, we're here with Richard Hall, District 4. Well, where does District 4 run? What are the boundaries of it, generally speaking?
Well, we're the west side of Las Cruces. So the entire west half of Las Cruces city limits is the outer boundary of District 4. And then our...
Some people don't know the difference between east and west. You got some streets
yeah,
there.
Yeah, Valley Drive, all the way from Mayfield High School down to... And I like to use Dick's Cafe as the closest recognizable place. So the majority of Valley Drive throughout the city is District 4. Highway 10, Interstate 10, interchanges the exit 138 and 140 are part of our district. So we go all the way down to the corner of Mesilla, Old Mesilla. We're literally borderline with Mesilla in a major way. And then on the north side, obviously, we end and Doñana begins. And on the east, pretty much the railroad tracks are the boundary.
All right.
But I have a couple of little thumbs, I like to call them. One goes into the Mesquite District, the Old Town Mesquite District, along with the Alameda and Main and Alameda-El Paseo interchange. So...
All right. Okay. So anyway, what are your plans? Why are you running?
Well, I'm running to really stop things from getting worse. As I've seen, like I said, there's lots of empty buildings in our town. Lots of businesses have closed and moved. And I would like to make Las Cruces a friendly, job-creating town where businesses are happy to open because getting open is not a hassle. I just spent time talking to a business owner at Better Life Pet Foods. She's a wonderful young lady. She's owned that business for 19 years. She's been in Las Cruces, I think, 20. And she went through all sorts of red tape and pain to open a second location up by Home Depot. She planned on opening in February or March. And because of a lot of the pain and suffering businesses go through with the city, didn't open until late August. And that cost her a lot of money. So I believe I'm really doing this reluctantly because I have businesses that need my attention, and I do have a coaching job where I love to coach. But I think the city needs the help more, and I'm hoping that myself and a few others
now
candidates
you're
win.
We need to change, but you've yet to say what we need to change.
Well, the taxes are too high. I mean, we had our taxes raised twice in the last year. Doñana County raised the gross receipts. City of Las Cruces maxed out on the allowed amount they could raise our gross receipts for them. And it was only to cover a small shortfall. Now they've got surplus coming in, and they're looking for creative ways to spend it. And that's not the way business or government should run. Another is impact fees. I'm against impact fees entirely. I would like to roll them back as Albuquerque and Santa Fe did. When they noticed their building starts going down, they took away the impact fees, and it brought their economies back. He's gone.
All right. So would you fight to decrease the taxes?
I would if it's possible. And in some ways, you're really fighting an uphill battle when you try to roll back things. Obviously, the impact fees is one of those things, but it's important enough. We've had 9 years of declining permits being issued in the city of Las Cruces.
Do you think it's something the city is proud of? Do you think there are people working in the city who feel like they're fighting against global warming or something?
I think I've heard comments. I saw a quote that one council person said Las Cruces is flourishing. I heard another one.
Who said that?
You know, I can't quote the exact name, but I know that there are council members and the mayor that are proud of our city, think it's on the right direction and doing great. And I totally disagree with that opinion.
Is the mayor is running on that?
I believe he's running on the success of the small things that have gotten accomplished, but it doesn't add up to enough. And I believe Miguel Silva is the candidate that will make a difference. He has seen firsthand as District 1 counselor for the last 8 years how the fight is won at times. And I believe with Miguel as mayor, we will be able to put things on the agenda that can really make changes.
Yeah, I just feel like, and I feel like this is might be part of the agenda of the golden earring, Billy Garrett, to keep the fee, you know, to keep the growth down for some bigger. I'd mentioned ideology earlier, but this, you've got this idea that the earth is this sacred vessel, it's this god, and we've got to protect the earth, and it doesn't matter about our little parochial interests in capitalism and stuff. We've got to do whatever we can to save the earth, and not really paying any attention to what's going on in the city.
Well, and the best rebuttal to that is the person you bring on once in a while, the weather guy. What's his name?
Bob Endlich.
Oh, Bob is awesome. Every time you have Robert Endlich on, I text you immediately and say, this guy needs to be heard by more people. If the entire United States could hear just 10 minutes of his factual-based, common-sense solution to a lot of the problems and non-problems. I mean, quite honestly, some of the problems they cite are fake.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when Wayne Hancock gets up and says that the population has doubled since 2007, and not only doesn't bother to – it took me 10 seconds to find out the answer to that, which it hadn't.
20%.
It's up 7%, and not only that, and we do have a caller here, but not only that, but and then when people try to correct them, they say it's not a poll, we're not taking a poll. Thanks for the call of the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is J.D. Rodriguez.
J.D. Rodriguez, good morning to you. How you doing?
Did all right. I'd like to ask Mr. Hall, rather than ask him, I want to thank you very much for his candidacy. And
thank you.
Also, I would like to ask him how he feels about term limits for the mayor.
I believe term limits is a great idea. Miguel Silva mentioned that term limits stops a person from getting lazy and losing vision, losing sight of what the real problems of any municipality is. So I think term limits is a great idea.
Okay. The reason I mention it is because I'm going to, I intend to run a petition for term limits to ensure that Ken Miyagishima does not give us another 4 years, four more years, if he makes it this time, of the same stuff that we're dealing with.
Thanks for the call, JD. Your radio is kind of ringing into the background. It's creating an echo. Thanks for the call. All right, folks, term limit ban, what do you think about that?
Well, my personal opinion is if you've served 2 4-year terms in any, whether it's city councilor or mayor or whatever, I believe you've had your chance to do things. And if you did well, great, hand off the baton to someone who can continue that tradition. But if you did poorly, obviously you need to be replaced.
Well, I mean, what is Ken running on? I mean, it was last year or the year before we had 300 jobs. And, you know, I'm trying to find
I haven't heard a lot from him. I haven't heard a lot of comments.
I'm trying to find an article here about, was it the city council or the county commission that voted against Dick Bags? and then there was another vote. People wanted in the city, the leadership wanted the government in the United States, the federal government, to know that we were opposed to global warming. You know, I mean, for the sake of the argument, global warming is either true or false, where the earth is either heating up and cooking, like the guy mayor from the Sierra Club says. If it's not, what are we doing? That there's an admitted 20-year hiccup in global warming. We're killing the economy here for ideology, for this theory that just doesn't make any sense, and ignoring the people. You know, people want to keep their families together. They'd like their kids to be able to get a job in this area. Anyway, 7:45, talking to Richard Hall, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. And when you call in, folks, turn down your radio, because it'll create a sound like it's coming off of a satellite or something. There's an echo. Folks, and we're going to come back and find out more details of Richard Hall's campaign, the only GOP member in this race.
Don't let it get me down, 'cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Yeah,
it's Kelly.
Is this the radio show?
As a matter of fact, it is. This is Kelly O'Connell. You're off the air, but who's this?
This is Bill Anderson, and I wanted to make a comment about the term limits business.
Okay, Bill Anderson, can I put you on hold?
Yes, you can.
Thank you very much. Thanks for calling. We'll be back in probably a minute and a half.
Give it a shot.
Thank you. Well, from what I understand, it's one of the hot button issues for people. I mean, people, you know, it's just like the U.S. Senator Congress. And then when the Tea Party tries to run somebody to replace these people, they get gamed by the party. And they end up putting somebody back in office who's like 80 years old. And look at this person. Well, I mean, I think that would be. I try not to give. I don't give people. I don't endorse. Oh yeah. The guy.
I just know that McCormick is going to move pretty quick. That would be like a fiber. You know what I mean? Running. Never
mind. Appreciate that. All right. So we've got a phone call and. Is this Bill?
Yes.
Bill, you wanted to say something about the term limits ban, or the term limits.
I certainly did.
Go ahead.
Well, the whole concept of term limits is complete nonsense.
All right.
It's called voting. okay? I don't care how often our illustrious mayor runs or how often he's allowed to run by any sort of law or whatever. If you vote him in, he's in.
Okay.
If you're too uninformed or too stupid to vote, you bring this on yourself. That's the end of the story.
Well, let me
There's
ask
nothing else to be said.
Bill, let me ask you this. Do you support term limits for the U.S. presidency?
No, absolutely not. You vote somebody in or you vote somebody out. End of the story.
Yeah,
that's what it's about. Oh. That's why we get to vote.
I understand, but so you think that when they put in the amendment for term limits on the U.S. presidency, they made a grave error?
Well, it's not necessarily an error in any particular direction. It's just pointless. It's another one of these meaningless, ignorant John Wayne politics.
All right.
Things that the American people love. If you want to vote for somebody, you vote for them. If you don't, you don't.
I got you. But now, what about the natural advantage that a person who's already been in office has? I mean, it's something like over 90% of these people get reelected.
Well, I think the phone's kind of breaking up here, but the point being that if a person's doing a good job in office, they're doing a good job. If they're not doing a good job, it doesn't matter. The more exposure they have, the better.
All right. So let me ask you.
I can see you're not doing a good job.
Right. And let me ask you one more thing. Which side of the aisle do you tend towards, the right or the left?
Hang on just a sec. Let me take you off speaker, boss.
Thanks. Sounds like we're in a jet.
Yeah, I think my machine's cutting out because of the surrounding noise.
But let me ask you this. I just wanted to ask, which side of the aisle are you most friendly to, left or right?
Oh, common sense. There's a lot of good ideas on the left. There's a lot of good ideas on the right. Okay, it's not. See, the problem is we're stuck in this simplistic ideological dichotomy. Oh, look, you know, all conservative Republicans are good. All liberal Democrats are bad. As though there were no conservative Democrats or liberal Republicans.
Bill, we're running out of.
We atomize everything. Hold on. It's all black and white. That's childish.
Hey, it might be childish, but most people have a natural inclination more towards the conservative theory or the liberal theory. But let me ask you this: can you name someone that you consider to be a great politician in the past?
Franklin Roosevelt.
Okay. Well, that gives me a feeling for where you're coming from. We're running out of time. Thanks for the call. Good call. All right, folks, we have got Richard Hall here, and we're going to come back and hear his spiel, his elevator speech for getting into office. And all right, 751 Kelly O'Connor Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450. In my opinion, there's no individual who is above identifying what they believe in. And with all due respect to Bill, the idea that common sense trumps everything and that there's a common sense party, you're part of a party in this country anyway, left or the right, or at least a movement. We'll be right back.
A pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing.
All right, so we've got Richard Hall. Richard Hall, you've got 3 minutes to persuade people to vote for you. What's your best pitch?
Okay. Well, I'm a business owner. I have been in Las Cruces 16 straight years. I lived here when I was a young man, but I've been here 16 straight years. My wife and I married 21 years. Being a business owner, I feel like I'll have a unique perspective that will help Las Cruces become more friendly, creating jobs. And I believe that lower taxes are a solution to bringing an economy around. I believe the impact fees are hurting our building and realty industries. I believe that our communities could be safer. There could be better lighting in our neighborhoods, better. I believe the police are doing a great job. The police and the sheriff's department in our communities are fantastic. But I believe they're not supported as much as they could be, and especially the sheriff's office, but that's a separate issue. Anyway, I have a 41 years of experience in coaching, and I believe I can coach the city council toward a better climate to attract more businesses to our city. More families in Las Cruces could start their own businesses that would grow, flourish, and become successful. We have a couple local businesses that I truly believe are, you know, not overnight successes, but they have worldwide reach. We have a salsa business, or salsa company in town that ships all over the world. We have manufacturing and all sorts of businesses that could even expand greater. So I'm just glad to be a part of the process. This is my first time doing this, so I'm brand new. And I just encourage people to look into the issues, and I look forward to their votes.
And how do people get in contact with your campaign?
I have a website that people can look up. It's www.hall4cc.com. That's Hall with the number 4cc.com. And my cell number, if anyone wants to call me or talk to me, is 575-642-3338.
One more time.
Okay, 575-642.
And how did people find your website?
Well, the best way is to type in the web address in the box at the top of your computer. Don't go to Google or Bing or any of those. Just type in www.hall4cc.com.
Thanks for coming on the show, Richard. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
No problem. All right. So, folks, just a minute left here. And story from the UK Mail, Daily Mail. Joe Biden called staff dumb Fs and plagiarized speeches during 1988 presidential campaign. And he couldn't remember anybody's name. He's apparently a good guy to his family and closer staff, but people who were part of the larger staff, he wouldn't learn their names. He'd just call them either Chief Cap'n, or when he got upset, Dumb F. And so, but he's the guy that they're trying to run for office now, and it's only going to get worse for him, even though he's got up to 20% of the vote right now, if he were to choose to run, which is an astounding thing. But there was also, and I'm trying to get this to come up, I might mention it tomorrow, from the Daily Mail, Native American woman leads chants of down USA during speech at the Million Man March after proclaiming that Muammar Gaddafi is still alive and calling for Obama to pardon a convicted murderer. And then in association with this, Louis Farrakhan said that America is under the judgment of God. In the meantime, Louis Farrakhan represents a religion which says that white people cannot be saved because their souls are too deformed, and that they believe that the mothership is circling the earth waiting to come back and wreak havoc and justice on the world, especially America, where they will build, quote, mile-high mountains. The mothership, and they also believe that there is a colony of black people living on Mars, Nation of Islam. 759 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Listen to Glenn Beck. Ciao.
I must find myself flat on my face. I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life. I tell you, I can't deny it. I thought of quitting, baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I didn't think it was worth one single try, I'd jump right on a big bird